Rincewind sidled into the great hall. There were a few torches burning, and it looked as though it had been set up for some sort of magical work. But the ceremonial candlesticks had been overturned, the complex octagrams chalked on the floor were scuffed as if something had danced on them, and the air was full of a smell unpleasant even by Ankh Morpork's broad standards. There was a hint of sulphur to it, but that underlay something worse. It smelt like the bottom of a pond. There was a distant crash and a lot of shouting.
"Looks like the gates have gone down," said Rincewind.
"Let's get out of here," said Bethan.
"The cellars are this way," said Rincewind, and set off through an arch.
"Down there?"
"Yes. Would you rather stay here?"
He took a torch from its bracket on the wall and started down the steps. After a few flights, the walls stopped being panelled and were bare stone. Here and there, heavy doors had been propped open.
"I heard something," said Twoflower.
Rincewind listened. There did seem to be a noise coming from the depths below. It didn't sound frightening. It sounded like a lot of people hammering on a door and shouting, "Oi!"
"It's not those things from the dungeon dimensions you were telling us about, is it?" said Bethan.
"They don't swear like that," said Rincewind. "Come on."
They hurried along the dripping passages, following the screamed curses and deep hacking coughs that were somehow reassuring. Anything that wheezed like that, the listeners decided, couldn't possibly represent a danger. At last they came to a door set in an alcove. It looked strong enough to hold back the sea. There was a tiny grill.
"Hey!"
shouted Rincewind. It wasn't very useful, but he couldn't think of anything better. There was a sudden silence. Then a voice from the other side of the door said, very slowly,
"Who is out there?"
Rincewind recognised that voice. It had jerked him from daydreams into terror on many a hot classroom afternoon years before. It was Lemuel Panter, who had once made it his personal business to hammer the rudiments of scrying and summoning into young Rincewind's head. He remembered the eyes like gimlets in a piggy face, and the voice saying,
"And now Mr. Rincewind will come out here and draw the relevant symbol on the board."
And the million-mile walk past the waiting class, as he tried desperately to remember what the voice had been droning on about 5 minutes before. Even now his throat was going dry with terror and randomised guilt. The dungeon dimensions just weren't in it.
"Please, sir, it's me, sir. Rincewind, sir," he squeaked.
He saw Twoflower and Bethan staring at him, and coughed.
"Yes," he added, in as deep a voice as he could manage. "That's who it is." "Rincewind, right."
There was a susurration of whispers on the other side of the door.
"Rincewind?"
"Prince who?"
"I remember a boy who wasn't any... The spell, remember?"
"Rincewind?"
There was a pause. Then the voice said,
"I suppose the key isn't in the lock, is it?"
"No," said Rincewind. "What did he say?"
"He said no."
"Typical of the boy."
"Who is in there?" said Rincewind.
"The Masters of Wizardry," said the voice haughtily.
"Why?"
There was another pause, and then a conference of embarrassed whispers.
"We, got locked in," said the voice, reluctantly.
"What, with the Octavo?"
Whisper, whisper.
"The Octavo, in fact, isn't in here, in fact,"
said the voice, slowly.
"Oh, but you are,"
said Rincewind, as politely as possible, while grinning like a necrophiliac in a morgue.
"That would appear to be the case."
"Is there anything we can get you?"
said Twoflower, anxiously.
"You could try getting us out."
"Could we pick the lock?" said Bethan.
"No use," said Rincewind. "Totally thief-proof."
"I expect Cohen would have been able to," said Bethan, loyally.
"Wherever he's got to."
"The luggage would soon smash it down," agreed Twoflower.
"Well, that's it then," said Bethan. "Let's get out into the fresh air. Fresher air, anyway." She turned to walk away.
"Hang on, hang on," said Rincewind. "That's just typical, isn't it? Old Rincewind won't have any ideas, will he? Oh, no, he's just a make-weight, he is. Kick him as you pass, don't rely on him, he's..."
"All right," said Bethan. "Let's hear it, then."
"A non-entity, a failure, just a..."
"What?"
"How are you going to get the door open?"
said Bethan. Rincewind looked at her with his mouth open. Then he looked at the door. It really was very solid, and the lock had a smug air. But he had got in once, long ago. Rincewind the student had pushed at the door, and it had swung open. And then a moment later the spell had jumped into his mind and ruined his life.
"Look," said a voice from behind the grill, as kindly as it could manage, "just go and find us a wizard, there's a good fellow."
Rincewind took a deep breath. "Stand back," he rasped.
"What?"
"Find something to hide behind," he barked, with his voice shaking only slightly. "You too," he said to Bethan and Twoflower.
"But you can't."
"I mean it."
"He means it," said Twoflower. "That little vein on the side of his forehead, you know, when it throbs like that, well,
shut up." Rincewind raised one arm uncertainly and pointed it at the door. There was total silence. "Oh, gods," he thought, "what happens now?" In the blackness at the back of his mind, the spell shifted uneasily. Rincewind tried to get in tune or whatever with the metal of the lock. If he could sow discord amongst its atoms so that they flew apart. Nothing happened. He swallowed hard and turned his attention to the wood. It was old and nearly fossilized, and probably wouldn't burn even if it soaked in oil and dropped into a furnace. He tried anyway, explaining to the ancient molecules that they should try to jump up and down to keep warm. In the strained silence of his own mind, he glared at the spell, which looked very sheepish. He considered the air around the door itself, how it might best be twisted into weird shapes so that the door existed in another set of dimensions entirely. The door sat there, defiantly solid. Sweating, his mind beginning the endless walk up to the blackboard in front of the grinning class, he turned desperately to the lock again. It must be made of little bits of metal, not very heavy. From the grill came the faintest of sounds. It was the noise of wizards untensing themselves and shaking their heads. Someone whispered, "I told you." There was a tiny grinding noise, and a click. Rincewind's face was a mask, perspiration dripped off his chin. There was another click, and the grinding of reluctant spindles. Trumon had oiled the lock, but the oil had been soaked up by the rust and dust of years, and the only way for a wizard to move something by magic, unless he can harness some external movement, is to use the leverage of his mind itself. Rincewind was trying very hard to prevent his brain being pushed out of his ears. The lock rattled. Metal rods flexed in pitted grooves gave in, pushed levers. Levers clicked, notches engaged. There was a long, drawn-out grinding noise that left Rincewind on his knees. The door swung open on pained hinges. The wizards sidled out cautiously. Twoflower and Bethan helped Rincewind to his feet. He stood grey-faced and swaying. "Not bad," said one of the wizards, looking closely at the lock. "A little slow, perhaps."
"Never mind that," snapped Jigladwort. "Did you three see anyone on the way down here?"
"No," said Twoflower.
"Someone has stolen the octavo!"
Rincewind's head jerked up, his eyes focused.
"Who?" "Trumon!"
Rincewind swallowed. "Tall man," he said. "Fair hair, looks a bit like a ferret."
"Now that you mention it..."
"He was in my class," said Rincewind. "They always said he'd go a long way."
"He'll go a lot further if he opens the book,"
said one of the wizards, who was hastily rolling a cigarette in shaking fingers.
"Why?" said Twoflower. "What will happen?"
The wizards looked at one another.
"It's an ancient secret, handed down from mage to mage, and we can't pass it on to no less men," said Wirt.
"Oh, go on," said Twoflower.
"Oh, well, it probably doesn't matter any more. One mind can't hold all the spells. It'll break down and leave a hole."
"What, in his head?"
"No, in the fabric of the universe," said Wirt. "He might think he can control it all by himself, but..."
They felt the sound before they heard it. It started off in the stones as a slow vibration, then rose suddenly to a knife-edge whine that bypassed the eardrums and bored straight into the brain. It sounded like a human voice singing or chanting or screaming, but there were deeper and more horrible harmonics. The wizards went pale. Then, as one man, they turned and ran up the steps. There were crowds outside the building. Some people were holding torches. Others had stopped in the act of piling kindling around the walls. But everyone was staring up at the Tower of Art. The wizards pushed their way through the unheeding bodies and turned to look up. The sky was full of moons. Each one was 3 times bigger than the disk's own moon, and each was in shadow except for a pink crescent where it caught the light of the star. but in front of everything, the top of the Tower of Art, was an incandescent fury. Shapes could be dimly glimpsed within it, but there was nothing reassuring about them. The sound had changed now to a wasp-like buzzing, magnified a million times. Some of the wizards sank to their knees.
"He's done it," said Wirt, shaking his head. "He's opened a pathway."
"Are those things demons?" said Twoflower.
"Ugh, demons," said Wirt. "Demons would be a picnic compared with what's trying to come through up there."
"They're worse than anything we can possibly imagine," said Panther.
"I can imagine some pretty bad things," said Rincewind.
"These are worse."
"Oh."
"And what do you propose to do about it?"
said a clear voice. They turned. Bethan was glaring at them, arms folded.
"Pardon?" said Wirt.
"You're wizards, aren't you?" she said. "Well, get on with it."
"What?
Tackle that?" said Rincewind. "Know anyone else?"
Wirt pushed forward.
"Madam, I don't think you quite understand."
"The dungeon's dimensions will empty into our universe, right?" said Bethan.
"Well, yes."
"We'll all be eaten by things with tentacles for faces, right?"
"Nothing so pleasant, but..."
"Are you just going to let it happen?"
"Listen," said Rincewind, "it's all over, d'ye see. You can't put the spells back in the book. You can't unsay what's been said. You can't..."
"You can try."
Rincewind sighed and turned to Twoflower. He wasn't there. Rincewind's eyes turned inevitably towards the base of the Tower of Art, and he was just in time to see the tourist's plump figure, sword inexpertly in hand, as it disappeared into a door. Rincewind's feet made their own decision, and from the point of view of his head got it entirely wrong. The other wizards watched him go.
"Well," said Bethan, "he's going."
The wizards tried to avoid one another's eyes. Eventually Wirt said,
"We could try, I suppose. It doesn't seem to be spreading."
"But we've hardly got any magic to speak of," said one of the wizards.
"Have you got a better idea, then?"
One by one, their ceremonial robes glittering in the weird light, the wizards turned and trudged towards the tower. The tower was hollow inside, with the stone treads of its staircase mortared spiral fashion into the walls. Twoflower was already several turns up by the time Rincewind caught him.
"Hold on," he said, as cheerfully as he could manage. "This sort of thing is a job for the likes of Cohen, not you. No offence."
"Would he do any good?"
Rincewind looked up at the actinic light that lanced down through the distant hole at the top of the staircase.
"No," he admitted.
"Then I'd be as good as him, wouldn't I?" said Twoflower, flourishing his looted sword. Rincewind hopped after him, keeping as close to the wall as possible.
"You don't understand," he shouted. "There's unimaginable horrors up there."
"You always said I didn't have any imagination."
"It's a point, yes," Rincewind conceded.
"But..." Twoflower sat down.
"Look," he said, "I've been looking forward to something like this ever since I came here. I mean, this is an adventure, isn't it? Alone against the gods, that sort of thing."
Rincewind opened and shut his mouth for a few seconds before the right words managed to come out.
"Can you use a sword?" he said weakly.
"I don't know. I've never tried."
"You're mad."
Twoflower looked at him with his head on one side.
"You're a fine one to talk," he said. "I'm here because I don't know any better, but what about you?"
He pointed downwards to where the other wizards were toiling up the stairs.
"What about them?"
Blue light speared down inside of the tower. There was a peal of thunder. The wizards reached them, coughing horribly and fighting for breath.
"What's the plan?" said Rincewind. "There isn't one," said Wirt.
"Fine, right," said Rincewind. "I'll leave you to get on with it, then."
"You'll come with us," said Panther.
"But I'm not even a proper wizard. You threw me out, remember?"
"I can't think of any student less able," said the old wizard. "But you're here, and that's the only qualification you need. Come on."
The light flared and went out. The terrible noises died as if strangled. Silence filled the tower, one of those heavy pressing silences.
"It stopped," said Twoflower.
Something moved high up against the circle of red sky. It fell slowly, turning over and over and drifting from side to side. It hit the stairs a turn above them. Rincewind was first to it. It was the octavo. But it lay on the stone, as limp and lifeless as any other book, its pages fluttering in the breeze that blew up the tower. Twoflower panted up behind Rincewind and looked down.
"They're blank," he whispered. "Every page is completely blank."
"Then he did it," said Wirt. "He read the spells. Successfully, too, I wouldn't have believed it."
There was all that noise, said Rincewind doubtfully. The light, too, those shapes. That didn't sound so successful to me.
Oh, you always get a certain amount of extra-dimensional attention in any great work of magic, said Panther dismissively. It impresses people, nothing more.
It looked like monsters up there, said Twoflower, standing closer to Rincewind.
Monsters? Show me some monsters, said Wirt.
Instinctively they looked up. There was no sound. Nothing moved against the circle of light.
I think we should go up and, congratulate him, said Wirt.
Congratulate? Exploded Rincewind. He stole the octavo. He locked you up.
The wizards exchanged knowing looks.
Yes, well, said one of them, when you've advanced in the craft, lad, you'll know that there are times when the important thing is success.
It's getting there that matters, said Wirt bluntly, not how you travel.
They set off up the spiral. Rincewind sat down, scowling at the darkness. He felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Twoflower, who was holding the octavo.
This is no way to treat a book, he said.
Look, he's bent the spine right back. People always do that. They've got no idea how to treat them.
Yeah, said Rincewind vaguely.
Don't worry, said Twoflower.
I'm not worried, I'm just angry, snapped Rincewind.
Give me the bloody thing.
He snatched the book and snapped it open viciously. He rummaged around in the back of his mind where the spell hung out.
All right, he snarled. You've had your fun, you've ruined my life. Now get back to where you belong.
But I...
protested Twoflower.
The spell, I mean the spell, said Rincewind. Go on, get back on the page.
He glared at the ancient parchment until his eyes crossed.
Then I'll say you, he shouted, his voice echoing up the tower. You can join the rest of them, and much good may it do you.
He shoved the book back into Twoflower's arms and staggered off up the steps. The wizards had reached the top and disappeared from view. Rincewind climbed up after them.
Lad, am I? He muttered. When I'm advanced in the craft, eh? I just managed to go around with one of the great spells in my head for years without going totally insane, didn't I?
He considered the last question from all angles.
Yes, you did, he reassured himself. You didn't start talking to trees, even when trees started talking to you.
His head emerged into the sultry air at the top of the tower. He had expected to see fire-blackened stones crisscrossed with talon marks, or perhaps something even worse. Instead, he saw the seven senior wizards standing by Trumon, who seemed totally unscathed. He turned and smiled pleasantly at Rincewind.
Ah, Rincewind. Come and join us, won't you?
So this is it, Rincewind thought. All that drama for nothing. Maybe I really am not cut out to be a wizard. Maybe... He looked up and into Trumon's eyes. Perhaps it was the spell, in its years of living in Rincewind's head, that had affected his eyes. Perhaps his time with Twoflower, who only saw things as they ought to be, had taught him to see things as they are. But what was certain was that by far the most difficult thing Rincewind did in his whole life was look at Trumon without running in terror or being very violently sick. The others didn't seem to have noticed. They also seemed to be standing very still. Trumon had tried to contain the seven spells in his mind, and it had broken, and the dungeon dimensions had found their hole all right. Silly to have imagined that the things would have come marching out of a sort of rip in the sky, waving mandibles and tentacles. That was old-fashioned stuff, far too risky. Even nameless terrors learned to move with the times. All they really needed to enter was one head. His eyes were empty holes. Knowledge speared into Rincewind's mind like a knife of ice. The dungeon dimensions would be a playgroup compared to what the things could do in a universe of order. People were craving order, and order they would get. The order of the turning screw, the immutable law of straight lines and numbers. They would beg for the harrow. Trumon was looking at him. Something was looking at him. And still the others hadn't noticed. Could he even explain it? Trumon looked the same as he had always done, except for the eyes, and a slight sheen to his skin. Rincewind stared, and knew that there were far worse things than evil. All the demons in hell would torture your very soul, but that was precisely because they valued souls very highly. Evil would always try to steal the universe, but at least it considered the universe worth stealing. But the grey world behind those empty eyes would trample and destroy without even according its victims the dignity of hatred. It wouldn't even notice them. Trumon held out his hand.
"The eighth spell," he said. "Give it to me."
Rincewind backed away.
"This is disobedience, Rincewind. I am your superior, after all. In fact, I have been voted the supreme head of all the orders."
"Really?" said Rincewind hoarsely. He looked at the other wizards. They were immobile like statues.
"Oh, yes," said Trumon pleasantly. "Quite without prompting, too. Very democratic."
"I preferred tradition," said Rincewind. "That way even the dead get the vote."
"You will give me the spell voluntarily," said Trumon. "Do I have to show you what I will do otherwise? And in the end you will still yield it. You will scream for the opportunity to give it to me."
"If it stops anywhere, it stops here," thought Rincewind. "You'll have to take it," he said. "I won't give it to you."
"I remember you," said Trumon. "Not much good as a student, as I recall. You never really trusted magic. You kept on saying there should be a better way to run a universe." "Well, you'll see. I have plans. We can..."
"Not we," said Rincewind firmly.
"Give me the spell."
"Try and take it," said Rincewind, backing away. "I don't think you can."
"Oh?"
Rincewind jumped aside as octarine fire flashed from Trumon's fingers and left a bubbling rock puddle on the stones. He could sense the spell lurking in the back of his mind. He could sense its fear. In the silent caverns of his head, he reached out for it. It retreated in astonishment like a dog faced with a maddened sheep. He followed, stamping angrily through the disused lots and inner-city disaster areas of his subconscious, until he found it cowering behind a heap of condemned memories. It roared silent defiance at him, but Rincewind wasn't having any.
"Is this it?"
he shouted at it. "When it's time for the showdown, you go and hide? You're frightened?" The spell said,
"That's nonsense. You can't possibly believe that. I'm one of the eight spells."
But Rincewind advanced on it angrily, shouting,
"Maybe, but the fact is I do believe it, and you'd better remember whose head you're in, right? I can believe anything I like in here."
Rincewind jumped aside again as another bolt of fire lanced through the hot night. Trumon grinned and made another complicated motion with his hands. Pressure gripped Rincewind. Every inch of his skin felt as though it was being used as an anvil. He flopped onto his knees.
"There are much worse things," said Trumon pleasantly. "I can make your flesh burn on the bones, or fill your body with ants. I have the power to..."
"I have a sword, you know."
The voice was squeaky with defiance. Rincewind raised his head. Through a purple haze of pain, he saw Two Flower standing behind Trumon, holding a sword in exactly the wrong way. Trumon laughed and flexed his fingers. For a moment his attention was diverted. Rincewind was angry. He was angry at the spell, at the world, at the unfairness of everything, at the fact that he hadn't had much sleep lately, at the fact that he wasn't thinking quite straight. But most of all he was angry with Trumon, standing there full of the magic Rincewind had always wanted but had never achieved, and doing nothing worthwhile with it. He sprang, striking Trumon in the stomach with his head and flinging his arms around him in desperation. Two Flower was knocked aside as they slid along the stones. Trumon snarled and got out the first syllable of a spell before Rincewind's wildly flailing elbow caught him in the neck. A blast of randomized magic singed Rincewind's hair. Rincewind fought, as he always fought, without skill or fairness or tactics, but with a great deal of whirlwind effort. The strategy was to prevent an opponent getting enough time to realize that, in fact, Rincewind wasn't a very good or strong fighter, and it often worked. It was working now, because Trumon had spent rather too much time reading ancient manuscripts, and not getting enough healthy exercise and vitamins. He managed to get several blows in, which Rincewind was far too high on rage to notice, but he only used his hands, while Rincewind employed knees, feet, and teeth as well. He was, in fact, winning. This came as a shock. It came as more of a shock when, as he knelt on Trumon's chest, hitting him repeatedly about the head, the other man's face changed. The skin crawled and waved like something seen through a heat haze, and Trumon spoke.
"Help me."
For a moment, his eyes looked up at Rincewind in fear, pain, and entreaty. Then they weren't eyes at all, but multifaceted things on a head that could be called a head only by stretching the definition to its limits.
Tentacles and saw-edged legs and talons unfolded to rip Rincewind's rather sparse flesh from his body. Two Flower, the tower, and the red sky all vanished. Time ran slowly and stopped. Rincewind bit hard on a tentacle that was trying to pull his face off. As it uncoiled in agony, he thrust out a hand and felt it break something hot and squishy. They were watching. He turned his head and saw that now he was fighting on the floor of an enormous amphitheatre. On each side, tier upon tier of creatures stared down at him, creatures with bodies and faces that appeared to have been made by crossbreeding nightmares. He caught a glimpse of even worse things behind him, huge shadows that stretched into the overcast sky before the Trumon monster lunged at him with a barbed sting the size of a spear. Rincewind dodged sideways, and then swung around with both hands clasped together into one fist that caught the thing in the stomach, or possibly the thorax, with a blow that ended in the satisfying crunch of chitin. He plunged forward, fighting now out of terror of what would happen if he stopped. The ghostly arena was full of the chittering of the dungeon creatures, a wall of rustling sound that hammered at his ears as he struggled. He imagined that sound filling the disc, and he flung blow after blow to save the world of men, to preserve the little circle of firelight in the dark night of chaos, and to close the gap through which the nightmare was advancing. But mainly he hit it to stop it hitting back. Claws or talons drew white-hot lines across his back, and something bit his shoulder. But he found a nest of soft tubes amongst all the hairs and scales, and squeezed it hard. An arm, barbed with spikes, swept him away, and he rolled over in the gritty black dust. Instinctively he curled into a ball, but nothing happened. Instead of the onslaught of fury he expected, he opened his eyes to see the creature limping away from him, various liquids leaking from it. It was the first time anything had ever run away from Rincewind. He dived after it, caught a scaly leg, and wrenched. The creature chittered at him and flailed desperately with such appendages as were still working, but Rincewind's grip was unshakable. He pulled himself up and planted one last satisfying blow into its remaining eye. It screamed and ran. And there was only one place for it to run to. The tower and the red sky came back with the click of restored time. As soon as he felt the press of the flagstones under his feet, Rincewind flung his weight to one side and rolled on his back with the frantic creature at arm's length. "Now!" he yelled. "Now what?" said Two Flower. "Oh, yes, right!" He swung the sword inexpertly but with some force, missing Rincewind by inches and burying it deeply in the thing. There was a shrill buzzing as though he had smashed a wasp's nest, and the melee of arms and legs and tentacles flailed in agony. It rolled again, screaming and thrashing at the flagstones, and then it was thrashing at nothing at all, because it had rolled over the edge of the stairway, taking Rincewind with it. There was a squelching noise as it bounced off a few of the stone steps, and then a distant and disappearing shriek as it tumbled the depth of the tower. Finally there was a dull explosion and a flash of octarine light. Then Two Flower was alone at the top of the tower. Alone, that is, except for seven wizards who still seemed to be frozen to the spot. He sat bewildered as seven fireballs rose out of the blackness and plunged into the discarded octavo, which suddenly looked its old self, and far more interesting. "Oh, dear," he said. "I suppose they're the spells."